WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. 8 people are in the hospital this morning after a car crashed into Ireland's Four Courts Irish pub in Arlington last night and started on fire.
4 of those are in critical condition, and the others are expected to be okay with non-life-threatening injuries. 6 people were also treated here on the scene, including Miss Mary Riley, a bartender and server who was inside working during the time of the crash.
And all of a sudden, we heard this massive, huge explosion, and we all just looked to where we heard the noise, and all I could see was just debris and smoke.
She says she's happy to be alive because it could have been much worse.
Police are not sure what made the car crash into the restaurant on Wilson Boulevard. That was Fox 5's Nano Centuo Bonsu reporting. A D.C. police officer shoots and injures an armed man last night who police say brutally assaulted a woman he lived with in their home on Savannah Street Southeast. Assistant Police Chief Andre Wright says police officers saw the man outside and went after him.
While pursuing this individual, he displayed a firearm. Officer gave multiple commands for this same individual to drop the firearm. This individual did not comply. The officer discharged at least 1 shot, striking the subject.
Wright says the officer then told the man to drop the gun again. He ignored that second order, so the officer shot him a second time. The man's in the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The FBI recovers documents marked with security classifications during a raid of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate on Monday. That's according to documents released yesterday.
The release of this search warrant has only emboldened former President Trump and his associates in saying that executing this search warrant for documents here at Mar-a-Lago was overkill. On his social network, Mr. Trump posted about the documents in question. Number one, it was all declassified. Number two, they didn't need to seize anything. They could have had it anytime they wanted without playing politics and breaking into Mar-a-Lago. It was in secured storage with an additional lock put on as per their request.
Fox's Jonathan Seri. The Montgomery County Board of Elections plans to certify the primary election results today.
The Montgomery County Board of Elections had to postpone plans to certify the election after 102 unopened sealed provisional ballots were found during a pre-certification audit. Now those ballots will be canvassed, according to Board Attorney Kevin Karpinski.
So after that, the ballots will be scanned and tabulated.
The most watched race is for the Democratic nomination for county executive. Incumbent Mark Elvidge currently 42 votes ahead of challenger David Blair, who is planning to ask for a recount. Maria Leaf on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Padres 10-5. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
The accident on 395 northbound after Duke Street clear, but traffic still slow through the area. 95 southbound at Warrington Road. That accident now on the left shoulder, but traffic still very slow from Garrison to La Quia. On the outer loop of the Beltway at the GW Parkway, that accident is still blocking the left lane, so use caution there. And on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway northbound past Route 100, there is still crash activity along the right side of the roadway. Now from GarageDirectClear.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Full sunshine on this Saturday. Temperatures in the lower 80s with low humidity. Tonight, clouds will be on the increase. Lows back the 50s and 60s. Mostly cloudy skies expected for your Sunday. Have the chance for some scattered showers and cooler temperatures. Highs tomorrow in the upper 70s to near 80 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
64 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Hour 2, John Gizzi joins us, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Of course, the big news on the White House beat, President Trump, Mar-a-Lago, and the FBI. We'll get to that shortly. But the big news on Friday that impacts all of us in the months and years ahead is the House passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, the chamber approving a $430 billion package. The vote, John, right down party lines, 220 to 207.
That's very significant, Rick. This was a controversial measure that passed the Senate along party lines and, in fact, required a tie-breaking vote from Vice President Harris. In the House of Representatives, as Speaker Nancy Pelosi noted, not a single Republican in that chamber voted for the measure. What this means is that looking at so much historic legislation that came out of Congress, from Social Security to Medicare to the civil rights legislation, and even to Ronald Reagan's tax cuts, which had significant Democratic support, the common denominator was members of Congress of both parties supported these landmark measures, and that is why they're more or less part of the landscape and have been for a long time. In striking contrast, when something is passed along party lines, the invectives rise, the charges and countercharges about the cost of measures fly like shrapnel, and as we saw with the Affordable Care Act, they're going to be a target for years to come. This is a measure that Republicans will campaign on, saying that it won't reduce inflation, contradicting what the Democratic pursued economists claimed, and particular the IRS becoming new, advanced, and an Uber agency. All of this is going to fuel Republican campaigns this fall, and we'll hear a lot about this act, and it will probably be dubbed the Inflation Non-Reduction Act.
The media is spinning this as a major win for the Democrats in the Biden administration, but is it also a rallying cry for the Republican base to come out because they see through a lot of the claims that are made in legislation?
They certainly see a different viewpoint, and they don't believe it will reduce inflation, and it will certainly enhance punitively anti-business regulation in the name of climate change. But what voters will understand the most, and Republicans are already discussing this, is that it enhances the strength of the IRS, allowing it to hire more than 87,000 new employees. That means that the Internal Revenue Service will have more employees than the FBI and the Pentagon put together. Now, President Biden has long personally favored a new and advanced IRS. Reports are that IRS personnel are moribund right now, that they have to bring in their own office supplies from home. Well, this doesn't just enhance the secretarial pool or the people working on calculators. Rather, it enhances enforcement. And while the president would like to say that $126 billion can be retrieved from people who are tax cheats or have money in offshore accounts, the average taxpayer is going to worry that he or she, if filing a long form, is going to be targeted by an IRS for audits, and that this time they're going to have the resources to be, well, shall we say, very antagonistic. That's going to be the Republican theme that comes out of the enactment of this controversial measure along party lines yesterday afternoon.
Speaking of controversy, the FBI raids Mar-a-Lago. A former president who may be running for re-election in 2024. You've watched the American presidency through the years, and you're a historian on the topic. Put this in perspective for us.
It's unprecedented. Let's put it on the table. Former presidents have had their disputes with their successors and their successors' administration. But the idea of armed agents raiding the residence and property of a former president, getting into his private safe and taking out documents that he had all the while he was out of town, is something that, well, the American public is not used to. I might add that Attorney General Merrick Garland said he authorized the warrant. Some information was released. The warrant became public late Friday afternoon, and of course, we're still waiting for an affidavit to provide more details. But here's what we know at this point. Back in June, using normal channels, some of the papers that President Trump brought with him to his home in Mar-a-Lago were returned to Washington, D.C. without incident. Well, we don't know what exactly the government was looking for or what is in the documents that were taken from the president's safe and from the room where these documents were kept. We will know that soon. If it's something about signing the Thanksgiving Day pardon for the turkey or other things, well, the FBI is not going to look good. If it's something more serious, and there's been suggestions that President Trump bought classified materials with him back to Florida, that's another story. For now, two things bear watching. One, the FBI itself. Republicans have long said that the FBI has been politicized and that its actions under former Director Jim Comey constituted involvement in politics. Chris Wray became director and this was supposed to be cleaned up. Clearly, few are going to believe that it's any different from the FBI that pursued Donald Trump based on an ersatz intelligence report by former British agent Christopher Steele, and that when they went into the FISA court seeking to put Donald Trump under surveillance in 2016, the FISA judge concluded by saying she wouldn't believe a word from the FBI. A lot of Republicans are thinking that, too. Donald Trump's numbers are up. In fact, among likely Republican candidates, combined polls show him with 53% of the Republican vote now.
So we had primaries this past week, and we have primaries, big ones, in the week ahead. Did you see any impact of all of the week's news on the primaries this past week?
Absolutely. It was a good night for Donald Trump. 24 hours after the raid on his residence and office in Florida, two high-profile races in which he involved himself turned out victories for the candidates Mr. Trump supported. In Wisconsin, Tim Michaels, businessman, construction company owner, defeated the former lieutenant governor of the Badger State. Donald Trump appeared at a rally on his behalf over the weekend, and polls showed the former lieutenant governor, Rebecca Clayfish, leading. Well, Mr. Michaels won by about 4 percentage points. People are attributing this to his support and from Donald Trump, the endorsement that means the most. In Connecticut, all observers, all Republicans in the know, and this reporter had said former House Republican leader Temis Claridis was going to win. She had the endorsement of the state party convention. But days before the voting, Donald Trump weighed in for her primary opponent, conservative Leora Levy. On Monday night, 1 hour after the FBI was in his property, Mr. Trump kept a promise to do a tele-rally for Leora Levy and gave her his strong endorsement. I might add that the 32,000 people who called in for the rally constituted more than a third of the voters who turned out the next day and gave Ms. Levy the upset. She will face Senator Dick Blumenthal, thanks in large part to the fact Donald Trump came out on her behalf strong at the end.
Two of the grand dames of Republican politics will be on the ballot this coming Tuesday. What do we expect, John?
Well, in Wyoming, all signs point to Liz Cheney's low point, a resounding defeat at the hands of Harriet Hegeman, who has the endorsement of the Republican State Committee and, oh yes, a fellow named Donald Trump. Her role in the January 6th commission essentially sealed her fate, people in the Cowboy State tell me, and she's raised $9 million, the most of any House candidate in history, but it doesn't seem to be helping. Betting is on a landslide, perhaps 60-40% for the daughter of the former vice president. And in Alaska, Sarah Palin, 13 years after she became the first woman to be on a national ticket as John McCain's running mate, is now vying for the lone at-large congressional seat in the land of the midnight sun. She faces a liberal Democrat, Mary Petralta, and another Republican, Nick Begich III, a high-tech entrepreneur and grandson of the state's late Democratic congressman. Sarah Palin, it was thought, would be a cinch in this race. But no one can tell, with all candidates, regardless of party, on the ballot, just who wins under the ranked choice voting system, where one's second choice gets counted until one candidate wins a majority of the votes. It's up in the air, but we know that the national media will be watching Alaska and talking about Sarah Palin Tuesday night, whether she wins or loses.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, as always, thank you very much. We'll look for your analysis of this week's primaries when we talk to you next Saturday.
I'm looking forward to it, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Me too. 7:21 now, Saturday morning update on WMAL. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Still some accident activity to watch out for in the outer loop of the Beltway at the GW Parkway. Tractor trailer still blocking that left lane. Just watch for brief delays there. The accident on 395 northbound at Duke Street cleared. Some delays remain at 95 southbound at Warrington Road. That accident on the left shoulder. Still very slow traffic from Courthouse Road. There is an accident northbound on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway past 100, and that is affecting the right lane. In Fairfax City, watch out for a flagging operation affecting southbound Chambridge Road at Cedar Avenue. That is closed until about 10 o'clock this morning. Flagmen will be in place directing motorists around the work zone. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Sunny skies on this Saturday. A cool start out there, but we will warm up and in the lower 80s this afternoon. Sunny skies, but we'll have some high thin clouds streaming in later on this afternoon and evening. Clouds will thicken up overnight, mostly cloudy. Lows back in the 50s and 60s for your Sunday. A few scattered showers Saturday, certainly the better day of the two. Highs tomorrow into the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
61 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:23 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It's not that easy these days. Trying to make sense of the Inflation Reduction Act. Steve Scalise had some comments. I want to mention, obviously, that it did pass the House, is expected to be signed by the president today. The vote, straight down party lines, 220 to 207. And here's how Steve Scalise kind of explains how the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, looks at it.
We've already seen a lot of the devastating consequences this bill will do to hard-working families who are already struggling under President Biden's inflation, the high gas prices. Is this going to make it better or worse? Well, just look at what CBO has said so far. They haven't evaluated the whole bill. They have said this army of 87,000 new IRS agents, more than doubling the size of the IRS, that they will be going after people making less than $400,000. That would break President Biden's pledge. They said, by the way, that lower-income families will be paying $20 billion in new taxes just from the IRS agents. On top of that, they have an energy tax in this bill. So if you don't think you're paying enough for gasoline now, in this bill, you will be paying more for gasoline, more for your utility bills, because this bill has a multi-billion dollar tax increase on energy. It's also got taxes that are going to hit small businesses and make it harder to create jobs at a time when inflation's already too high because of spending. They're going to spend over $700 billion more. Everybody knows the budget gimmicks. When they say it's going to reduce the deficit, does anybody really believe that?
I don't. The interesting back and forth between Mayor Adams of New York, Mayor Bowser of D.C., and the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott. It continued this week, basically New York versus Texas. And Beto O'Rourke is threatening now to have New Yorkers come down and bang on doors for Beto O'Rourke's candidacy. They would work it out between Mayor Adams and Beto O'Rourke so that New Yorkers would come down to canvass for Beto O'Rourke. Well, how does Governor Abbott feel about that?
Make my day. There could hardly be anything better to aid my campaign against Beto O'Rourke than to have Beto O'Rourke have his campaign aided by a bunch of New Yorkers.
Well, here's how Eric Adams looks at it. He's the mayor of New York, of course.
Greg Abbott is the worst among us. For him to force people onto buses and send them into parts of the country that they don't understand instead of giving them the support they need.
And here's Governor Abbott's response.
This is rank hypocrisy. Mayor Adams said that they welcome in illegal immigrants. And now, once they have to deal with the reality of it, they're suddenly flummoxed and they cannot handle it. They are now getting a taste of what we're having to deal with.
Well, this will continue for sure. 727, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland on the way.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Customers and employees at Ireland's Four Corners Pub in Arlington ran for their lives last night after a car crashed into the restaurant and started a fire. Bartender Mary Riley tells Fox 5.
Pure panic just broke out and everyone was screaming, get out the back, get out the back.
14 people were injured, 8 taken to the hospital. The Arlington County Fire Department is trying to figure out what caused the crash. Some Republicans questioning the FBI's raid of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home this week, where documents labeled top secret were seized. Congressman Mark Mellon tells Fox News.
If the FBI was thinking this was an immediate national security threat, why did it take them 500 days to call it?
Mr. Trump contends the seized documents have been declassified. Election workers in Montgomery County will meet this morning to count 102 unopened sealed provisional primary ballots that were found Thursday during a pre-certification audit. The Board of Elections will then certify the results. Right now, incumbent County Executive Mark Elrich is 42 votes ahead of challenger David Blair in the race for the Democratic nomination for the seat. An armed man is shot 2 times by D.C. police yesterday and injured after police say he refused to drop a gun he was holding. Assistant Chief Andre Wright says officers followed the suspect after he brutally assaulted his domestic partner in their home on Savannah Street Southeast.
All of that's still under investigation, so I cannot tell you at this point in time whether his weapon was discharged.
The man's in the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Padres. Traffic and weather next. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Still some accident activity on the BW Parkway northbound after 100 in the right lane. And now reports of a crash on eastbound 50 at the Bay Bridge in the left lane, so use extra caution there. You will find some slowdowns. Still some accident activity on the outer loop of the Beltway at the GW Parkway blocking the left lane. Watch for some delays there. Traffic is slow going on 95 southbound, headed from Garrisonville Aquia towards the Centerport Parkway, but the earlier accidents in Stafford all cleared away. Now from GarageDroidPair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, sunny, temps in the lower 80s with low humidity. Tonight, clouds, lows in the 50s and 60s. Right now, 64 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
News Talk 105.9
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart, president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be on with you.
Well, thank you. Obviously, the talk around Washington and the talk around the world is the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago. And what started out is National Archives trying to get some documents back, and they had some negotiations back in June. They had officials down there. They suggested they put an additional lock on the door, and then things seemed to go silent until the shot heard around the world on Monday of this week. Here's a headline from the Daily Mail. Trump is under investigation for violating the Espionage Act after FBI recovered 11 sets of classified documents from Mar-a-Lago.
I just want to get your perspective on this, Tony, because you've been around this for a long time. You've studied it. And, you know, this is morphing. And, you know, I think one of the pundits was suggesting execution at some point this week on one of the cable news channels. So this is just going way out of control, just as things did back when Adam Schiff had all that evidence of the Russian collusion.
So let's start with where you started. The intelligence committees, any raid of any significance relating to foreign intelligence or counterintelligence, that has to be briefed and advanced to both intelligence committees of both houses. Would it surprise you, Rick, to learn that neither committee was briefed on this? Probably not. So they weren't briefed. So clearly this was not a major intelligence activity, or it was not meant to be something they wanted anyone of either party to know about in advance, because I think there are people in the Democrat ranks who would probably see this for what it is, a fishing expedition. So let's go to the next element then to break this down, which is the actual list of documents they walked away with, what was on the warrant. And oh, by the way, there's no actual affidavit attached to the warrant. Imagine that. Probable cause, Rick, has to be part of an affidavit which basically swears out what exactly the theory of the crime is. And these things are surprisingly absent for something of this high profile. So those two things alone would cause any rational individual, especially a rational reporter, if there's any such thing left in Washington, except for the two I know, to actually sit back and say, whoa, gee, are we being lied to again like the Russia collusion narrative? The whole drama of nuclear codes, anybody who understands anything about DOD, Rick, understands nuclear codes are changed frequently, especially when you change office. So any information about a nuclear code would be obsolete within hours of leaving office. Yet you see this total, like, I don't know how to describe it other than a frenzy of fantasy that has resulted in all of these news outlets just, you know, churning up all of this hate. And then not to mention the bottom line is every other president who's had to go through this, Barack Obama walked away with 30 million documents, I believe. And each one of them were treated with kid gloves based on something called executive privilege. Executive privilege was completely and utterly lost by this action. This hasn't even been brought up to any great degree that I've seen discussed in the press. But think about that, Rick. You know, every other president has been given that right, whatever you want to call it, the idea of executive privilege, which allows them to maintain records and notes of their own internal dialogue and deliberations. That's gone. So, that's what the reality is. No matter how anyone wants to lay it out, the last thing I'll say is that Merrick Garland is a complete fraud if he doesn't understand that the president is an Article II official. He is the ultimate official who has the arbitration of all information in the executive branch. And the moment Trump, as president, declassified something, end of story. No court is ever going to go against the Constitution on this, since the Constitution is black and white on this. There's no room for equivocation. So the fact that Garland went out there in front of the world and laid this all out saying that this was all done under the rule of law, it was done under the color of law by the fact that it is provable that the Constitution gives the president the right to do whatever he wants with all information within the executive branch.
Well, what struck me is this material is at Mar-a-Lago, that's gated, and it's protected by the Secret Service. You know, it's not like
right.
You've got some kid in his room that's about to post all this stuff online. You know, this
right.
is material. I mean, President Trump didn't publish it. You know, he hasn't sent it out to his friends.
No,
apparently remains
to see it. Right.
It remains secure under the
right.
watchful eye of the Secret Service. So.
Right.
You know, the idea that this was some urgency and then there's this
there
period
no
this yeah. period of time after there were officials there in June, and they all seemed to get along and cooperate, and President Trump at the time did what they asked him to do about a little additional security on a lock, and then things seemed to go quiet, and then all of a sudden, boom.
This is like Senator Trent Lott once told me in the Green Room at Fox. Whatever they're talking about publicly, the issue is something else entirely. And the other issue here is the fact that the 6th January committee is getting nowhere. There's going to be no criminal charges against President Trump, so therefore they had to go to Plan B. This is it. You're seeing their Plan B play out, because all they're trying to do at this point, Rick, is try to find something that will stick to Donald Trump that they can say he's under investigation, he's being prosecuted, he's no longer eligible for office. That's what they're going for here, and that's what this is really all about.
And I remember when there were a lot of questions about Hillary Clinton and material that she had on her server, which could be accessed by anybody around the world that was able to breach her server, a little less secure than being locked in the basement protected by the Secret Service. Apparently that wasn't such a big deal at the time.
There's 31,000 documents still missing because Ms. Clinton refused to ever have a government .gov email address. She always used clintonemail.com, and that was that itself wasn't a violation of the Records Act. Plus, those 31,000 email, which to this day have never been accounted for, is a major violation. And in those instances, there were classified information up to and including TSSCI and beyond that, code word information, but nobody ever raided her. So just saying, there seems to be a disparity.
The attack yesterday on Salman Rushdie, he's 75 years old, stabbed by an attacker on stage. Iran had vowed years ago that they would kill him. Do we know of any connection at this point, or is it much too early to tell what the suspect's motivation was?
Well, I think it's a bit too early, but it is related to the fatwa issued by the Iranian government. What I'm concerned about, Rick, is this seems to be a pattern of the Iranians acting more and more aggressively. Also, in the media recently, there was information about a plot by the Iranians to kill John Bolton and Mike Pompeo. So these are things that cannot be taken lightly. I think in many instances there's an overt focus by the FBI on things other than foreign counterintelligence. Duh. And I think we need to make sure that the FBI, if it's going to exist, on those things which actually would contribute to the public good, and not serving as a political wing of a political party. So this is an area that I'd like to believe the FBI is going to take and do a much more vigorous job of investigating over the next few weeks to make sure there's no more plots out there that are being plotted against U.S. leaders.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, host of the Thought to Action podcast at LondonCenter.org. What's on this week?
So we're doing a couple different things relating to the current activities. The act that was just passed, counter inflation. We think it's going to do the opposite. So we'll be talking in detailed terms about the American act to inflate the economy to the point we can't buy anything. So tune in to Thought to Action. I think you'll all get a good education of what's really coming.
You'll find it at LondonCenter.org. Tony, thank you.
Thank you.
7:45, Saturday morning update on WMAL. Talk to KT McFarland next, but first we head to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray is there this morning.
The earlier incident on the outer loop of the Bellevue at the George Washington Parkway finally cleared away, but watch out for some brief delays there. On 95 southbound at Garrisonville Aquia, watch for delays extending from that point heading towards the Centerport Parkway, but you will find all travel lanes open. In Fairfax City, watch out for a flagging operation taking place on Chambridge Road southbound between Fairfax Boulevard and Main Street, right at Cedar Avenue. The work crews will direct you around the work zone, and that should be in place until about 10 o'clock this morning. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Sunny skies on this Saturday, a cool start out there, but we will warm up and in the lower 80s this afternoon. Sunny skies, but we'll have some high thin clouds streaming in later on this afternoon and evening. Clouds will thicken up overnight, mostly cloudy, lows back in the 50s and 60s for your Sunday. A few scattered showers Saturday, certainly the better day of the two. Highs tomorrow into the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
61 degrees in the nation's capital, 746, the Saturday morning update. 7:49, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us. Of course, KT was President Trump's deputy national security advisor. She is a board member of the American Conservative Union and author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, always an honor to have you join us.
Honor and a pleasure for me too, Rick.
Thank you. You were in the White House, and when you look at the events at Mar-a-Lago, then you look at the broader past 6 months, the January 6th committee hearings, this week's media frenzy, and the speculation of the punditry, how do you put it all in perspective for us?
Well, the overarching thing is that there's that unholy trinity of the left-wing media, the government bureaucrats, 97% of whom vote for the Democrats, and the Democrats in Congress and now the Biden White House. It's that unholy trinity. They're the same people. They're making another run at Trump. They just can't give it up. I mean, first it was the fake Russia hoax during his presidency. Then there were the two impeachments, and now the January 6th hearings. And they're in such a fevered pitch, because they failed in all of those. I mean, there's no evidence, it turns out, no smoking gun. And in the case of the Steele dossier, which was the original Russia hoax document, it's all just plain lies and fabrications. And now they're raiding Trump's house. Well, it's another fishing expedition. They've got to find something, anything that can bring Trump down. And, you know, it's not working for them. Even polls are now showing that the people who thought that Trump probably committed a crime before the January 6th hearings got underway, now more people think he probably didn't commit a crime. So each one of these attempts is failing. But specifically on the charge in the Mar-a-Lago raid, there are just three issues here. One, the argument that he mishandled classified information was a non-starter. As president, he had the ability to declassify any document, no matter how top secret. And when he left the White House, presumably when he took the documents with him, he was still president. He left right in early mid-January before the inauguration. So any documents he took with him, he could have declassified. Now, if the Justice Department said, well, he didn't do it before he left office, he didn't fill out the right form, he didn't do the right paperwork to declassify, they look like petty bureaucrats. I think the real motivation for the raid is that they were hoping to find some evidence, any evidence they possibly could find, of some kind of a crime that they could accuse him of. Or when the same thing happened to me, former Attorney General Mukasey said, when the FBI came after me, he said, well, it's like they're boiling the ocean in hopes a couple of dead fish are going to float to the surface. Hmm. So the argument that it was classified information, that just doesn't make any sense. Number two, the media criticism of Trump while he was president was that he didn't read his highly classified president's daily brief, that he was too lazy, that he needed to be briefed orally. And I was in the Oval Office and I briefed him every morning. You do brief him orally. He doesn't keep those papers. He doesn't read those papers. So somehow the argument that he took those classified documents with him, documents that he never read in the first place and he didn't really care about, somehow that he's now got them in Mar-a-Lago and hidden in Melania's closet, It just doesn't make any sense. And then finally, so I got really curious, Rick. I went back over the last couple of days and I looked at the Washington Post articles and the New York Times articles and the same with CNN, MSNBC. It was exactly the same as with the Russia investigation, which we later, of course, find out was a complete fabrication, a hoax, that the DOJ and the FBI, they knew about it was a fraud from the beginning, but they pursued Trump anyway because they hated Trump. It was the same journalists who wrote these stories as wrote the Russia hoax stories. And it was even in the same language. There would be in every one of these articles of the last week, there's something with a quote like, according to anonymous sources with direct knowledge of the case, but who are unauthorized to speak on the record, blah, 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 blah. So it's the same people who are following the same playbook that they did with the Russia hoax. Same people, same tactics, same language, same leaks, and the same named reporters. And I know from personal experience that the intelligence agencies work with their media allies. And when they do that, and in the case of me and other people, in the Russia investigation, they take an email that you've written. It's an unclassified email, the one that you sort of tapped out on your cell phone. They chop it up. They spin it around, take it out of context, delete some sentences here, move around some sentences there, and then they make what you said, your email, look exactly the opposite of the original meaning of your email. And whether it's the government, you know, intelligence community and the FBI who are doing this perfidious act, or whether it's their allies in the press who are doing it, it doesn't really matter. Again, they're the same people. What happens is that the story that then comes out is dead wrong. In my case, the New York Times, there was one incident where the New York Times took an email that I supposedly written, and then they chopped it up and moved the sentences around and made it look like I'd done some terrible thing. And yet the New York Times had to rewrite that story several times throughout the day. On the online version, they changed the headlines, they watered down the accusations, they dropped some of the out-of-context quotes. But the shock value is the first time an article appears. And that's what all the other media runs. So it was exactly what's happening this time. They haven't even bothered to change the playbook. It's the same thing.
Where do you think it goes in terms of, does this play out with the American public? Do they buy it, or what happens?
Well, I think during the Russian investigation, all the pundits kept saying, well, there must be some crime here, or the FBI wouldn't be going to these lengths. There must be a real crime here, or the Mueller investigation wouldn't be doing what they're doing with a wide investigation. But, of course, it turned out there was no, you know, there was nothing there. There was no there there. That's what the pundits are saying now. Well, there must be some really serious information hidden in Mar-a-Lago and Melania's closet, or the FBI wouldn't have done this raid. So wait a minute. The first time it was a fraud, second time it's a fraud. I think what's going to happen is that now it's going to guarantee Trump runs again. As you know, I work for him. I remain close to him. I see him every now and then, talk to him. I've not talked to him about this, but I honestly think he had not made his mind up in his own mind about whether to run for 2024. You know, he talks about he's going to run, and he's going to keep people guessing till the very, very last minute, but I don't think in his own mind he made his mind up. But I think this is going to push him to run. You know, Trump loves a fight, and if somebody comes after him, man, he is going back after them with, you know, twice as hard. So I think he runs. I don't think it's going to be for anybody who might have potentially challenged him in the primary. If Trump is the guy carrying the torch for government abuse and drain the swamp, I think it's very difficult for any candidate running against him in a primary. And I also think it guarantees massive turnout of Trump supporters. You know, elections aren't won by polls. They're run by people who actually show up and vote. And in most cases, voter turnout is 60%, maybe 80% in a hotly contested election. What this is going to guarantee is that all Trump supporters show up 100%. And a lot of the fence sitters, well, they're going to vote for Trump because they don't like the government abuse of power. And so I think that what happens is that Trump runs again, especially if it's against Biden or some fire-breathing left-wing Democrat progressive. You know, all the Republicans are going to show up. They're going to vote for Trump. Even if they don't like Trump, they'll vote for Trump. And so I think at the end of the day, you know, the people in Washington bubble, the swamp, the unholy trinity, they've outsmarted themselves. I think they're going to get exactly the opposite of what they wanted.
KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And I understand you're coming up on the Fox News Channel, Fox and Friends, in the 9 o'clock hour this morning?
I'll be on at 9 o'clock, so I better hustle off the phone with you and head to the studio.
You're the leadoff batter. KT McFarland, thank you so much.
Honor and a pleasure.
Thank you. It is 7:58, and that is it for the Saturday morning update. The 8 o'clock news coming up next with Heather Curtis, and then it's Garden Sense. Stick around.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL-FM.